Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Ed Thompson with the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to WRMR, Revenue Marketer Radio. Every Thursday at 1, we meet to talk to a real revenue marketer to learn tips and tricks on how they made that transition from traditional marketing to revenue marketing. And it's more than just listening. This is an interactive show, so please feel free to call in or chat, and we'd be happy to include you in the dialogue. Before I introduce our guest, I'd like to take a moment to define the term revenue marketing. We get a lot of listeners who have not heard this term before. A revenue marketer is a specific type of marketer, one who has revenue or revenue-related accountability through all kinds of campaigns, communications, and digital interactions they create. They're responsible for the top of the sales funnel, interacting with and nurturing leads until they're sales ready. They all use some type of marketing automation platform integrated with their CRM to power their revenue marketing practice to get revenue results. This radio show explores this role with all of its facets: metrics, people, skills, and compensation, organizational structure, processes, sales and marketing alignment, technology, content and creative, demand generation strategies, and tactics. Every revenue marketer on this show began where you are today. And they are here to share their journeys, their successes, and their gotchas, so that your journey to becoming an elite revenue marketer will be quicker and smoother. So I'm very pleased to introduce today's guest, James McGill. James is the Vice President of Marketing, Business Operations, and Software Development at QuantaPoint. James has global experience in marketing strategy, communications and automation, business operations, and product business management. James holds a master's in chemical engineering from the University of Louisville and an executive MBA from the joint program offered by the Universities of Calgary and Alberta. James, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to hearing your story and how you sort of made this journey to becoming a revenue marketer, and some of the stories that you have to share, because you've done some really interesting things that I know our audience is just going to love.
Of course.
So could you tell us a little bit about QuantaPoint and your role there?
Sure. Well, I mean, what QuantaPoint essentially does is creates digital facilities that improve safety and decision-making for building, managing, and upgrading facility assets for, you know, the offshore process, power, and architectural industries. Because most of these don't have good drawings or CAD models or anything that represents the 3D of the structure. And by digitizing it, we can provide them access to that in their design, management, and other tools. At QuantaPoint itself, I create and execute the global marketing strategy, you know, optimize business and sales operations, drive software development, and really help ensure alignment of marketing, software, support, and sales teams.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a very technical product. It sounds like a technical marketing role. It sounds as though it's very technology-driven. And what I've seen is that you're leveraging some microsites to improve your demand generation results. Now, how did that come about?
Well, we'd looked at using, you know, different email campaigns, et cetera, and to go back, you know, we, QuantaPoint, in our digital facility technology, it had, you know, a lot of success in the nuclear industry, but, you know, more recently we focused on oil and gas refining and chemical industries, and we wanted to re-engage with those markets, and we thought of doing, like we'd done before, an email campaign with some landing pages behind it. But one of the things that we've found in the past, and I think a lot of companies find, is that, you know, once a prospect clicks through, say, to your email, to the landing page, they typically don't go back because they've seen, you know, all the content, and if it doesn't catch them that one time, then you won't have the opportunity to catch them again, sort of like you spilled your candy in the lobby, so to speak. Now, for this campaign, we actually wanted to do it a little bit differently. And we decided to do a drip marketing approach, but instead of doing it with email or in addition to, we're actually doing it with, you know, the group of related pages that we call our microsite. So what we're doing is we're going to list all of the different applications for nuclear power on the microsite on the left-hand side on the main page, but only a few of these pages are going to be available initially. And then we're going to use the content from the pages to craft emails, such as, you know, one in a series of eight. And with each email, we're going to add content or enable the content, I should say, on the microsite itself. So we believe that it'll make the microsite more sticky. In other words, people will come back to view new content, especially if it's relevant to them, because they know we're adding more things to the site, both in the email and the site itself. I mean, our thoughts is that this will increase the interest and sort of the overall conversion rates and, as I said, stickiness of the microsite itself.
And now you chose microsites to do this with. Was there a key reason to do it that way rather than any other way that you saw?
Well, I mean, we rather than doing it as subpages on our website, we wanted to keep it focused around the specific industry and applications. Because sometimes, you know, too much content, you can wander off, you click, and then you're in, say, another industry. So we wanted to keep it very focused and linked to our main website in the header, but really focused on this specific industry and applications on the microsite itself. That's why we chose that.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, when we build nurturing programs to pull our people into, we tend to tell a progressive story. You're actually taking that one step further and telling that progressive story using a microsite.
That's correct. And, you know, I think that it actually makes, that's one of the powers of drip marketing is you get more than one bite at the apple in terms of a number of messages, you know, to where one will connect with the persons or industries or groups that you're targeting. But microsites have been more a dump of information. Here's everything that we know. And it can be, you know, overwhelming or not applicable or what have you. And we're sort of combining both of those concepts.
Now, what are you doing as far as if somebody comes into the program, you know, not everybody responds to the first email you send them, right?
Absolutely.
Not even respond to the second or third. And you said there's a series of eight, I think you said?
Yes, that's correct.
You know, when somebody comes in at stage four, for instance.
You know, that's a good question. It's part of the internal discussions and thought processes we have. We have the first three already open because we also didn't want to starve them from content. So the first three areas were populated and developed. So if they come in at four, you know, they would still have the first three but the fourth additional. So, you know, it's sort of a fine balance. You want to give them enough to keep them interested but not too much to satiate their, you know, their desires or needs for knowledge and understanding. So, you know, that was the balance we sort of struck. And this is our foray into this, and we'll learn a little bit better as we go on what works and what doesn't work. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say it's interesting that you already had thought of that because, you know, it would be awkward to sort of come to that one of those microsites and have that feeling like you're halfway through a conversation that had already started without you.
Exactly. I mean, one of the things that the technology we use doesn't currently support is the ability to trigger, say, from an email where they should appropriately be. In other words, if they respond to the fifth email, having all five enabled by that, or if they respond to the third or what have you. Right now it's going to be a bit of a manual exercise. We're going to look at automating that going forward. We just don't have the back-end support to do that. But ideally, that's what would happen is you would be up to that point in the conversation. That's what we're going to enable manually now.
Okay. So you manually enable these pages progressively as those different communications are timed and sent out?
That's right. Now, there is a side benefit to that. I mean, one of the challenges with, microsites or landing pages in the past is you had to get all the content ready up front. That could be a huge undertaking, which could really delay the release. In this way, we can progressively develop the content and even modify it as we go through the campaign. We don't have to take one big bite at the apple. We can actually develop sort of stepwise and take baby steps toward developing it and develop and modify the content based on the response and the like we get. So it gives us, you know, more chances to connect. Plus,
absolutely. So when you started this program, what were the goals of the program itself? I mean, generating leads for your sales team? Is it, expanding some of your base accounts? What was the general driver for the whole thing?
Well, I mean, one of the things I mentioned earlier is that we'd been involved in the nuclear industry and been quite successful in that, but it sort of changed our focus. We really wanted to re-engage there, and that means a number of things. One, sort of in the broader demand sense, recreate some awareness of who QuantaPoint is, our capabilities, and the benefits and applications for the nuclear industry. Secondly, identify, the higher value targets based on their demographics, their behavior, et cetera, for the sales team to go after. And thirdly, to, of course, generate direct opportunities that we can follow on and convert.
Okay. Now, you're using a marketing automation system to accomplish some of this. Which system are you using?
We're actually using Marketo for our marketing automation. And we actually did a pretty in-depth analysis when we first started looking at these types of systems about 2.5 years ago.
And you've been deployed for about how long?
2 years. I mean, we essentially, the first thing we did is we looked at our marketing and business goals, determine the marketing automation system we want to use, things like, combining disparate information from web visits, content downloads, et cetera, into sort of a single consistent view of the prospect, being able to do lead scoring based on behavior, demographics, so we only passed leads that were, sales ready to sales, and then having some type of nurturing using, email campaign, landing pages, et cetera. So, about 2 years ago, I evaluated a number of marketing automation systems looking at things like, tightness of integration with Salesforce.com, which is our CRM and SFA tool, the ability to do drip marketing, real-time prospect tracking, scoring, landing pages, and, of course, price. And we ended up selecting Marketo as the tool that really best fit our marketing goals.
Okay. So as part of this, you mentioned scoring. Are you scoring on these microsites?
We are, actually, and we use, of course, if they haven't been identified, like they suppose they don't visit from the campaign, someone tells them about it and they visit, we do the anonymous lead scoring based on the activities they take, clicking a number of pages will get you points, but if you visit a large number of pages, 10, you'll get a bonus. If you download content or view some of the flash videos or embedded videos, there's an increase for that. Now, if we know who they are, they register for content or they click a link in the email to arrive at the microsite, there's also a demographic component to that. So a vice president or a director receive a higher score than a manager or staff level. So we do incorporate lead scoring not only into these microsites, but all of our email campaign and throughout our entire website.
Okay, and then you're presenting that through Salesforce.com to your sales team, and when do they engage?
Well, that's right. One of the benefits we saw to Marketo is with their Sales Insight tool, the sales team can see all of the information that we see through Marketo within Salesforce. So what websites have they visited? What interesting moments have taken place with that lead, like downloading content or viewing videos, et cetera? We only pass leads to sales when they're sales ready, and we chose a lead score based on, an appropriate number of actions, activity, and demographics. And in our case, it was 50. So if someone comes on in a single visit, they visit 10 pages on the website, they download content, they view a video, and they're a vice president, they'll be sales ready. So in that case, they may not have requested to be contacted, but based on their actions, they've more or less gone from, doing research and benefits into a comparison, lead nurture stage, then that's something appropriate for sales to follow up on, as compared to someone who visits one or two pages and leaves and doesn't come back.
Okay. And is that all happening, in somewhat real time with your sales force, so they're watching it and they're aware of these people moving through the process?
Well, the sales-ready leads happen in real time. As soon as someone meets a criteria, it's automatically assigned out as a lead in sales, and the salesperson's notified. Within the Sales Insight tool itself, the salesperson can actually select to track individuals as well. So suppose, you know, there's someone that they're trying to get in contact with, they send a proposal to or what have you. They can actually put a tracker on those, and when they send them an email, if they click a link in that email or visit a page on the website, they're notified. So that's a good way to know someone's probably at their desk near their phone to call them.
Right. I mean, it's all about being able to do that very quickly. You know,
exactly, and the real time was the access, direct access to that information, both historical and real time, both in Marketo for myself and the marketing team, but also in Salesforce for sales, I think was one of the key drivers in selecting Marketo. I think there's a very tight integration there.
Yeah, I think, you know, the faster a salesperson or a qualification person can get on that phone and have that initial conversation, you know, some of the statistics I've seen is if you are able to reach out within 5 minutes, you're 21 times more likely to qualify that person.
That's true. Well, it's top of mind. I mean, you know, one of the things and the reasons that we developed, you know, this drip microsite concept in combination with the nurture marketing is that what is the saying, which I think it's been borne out by research, somebody has to see something 5 to 9 times, you know, 7 times on average for it to, you know, make an impression and be something that could generate interest or determine if they're interested at all. So if you don't catch them right when it's top of mind, you really have to go through that funnel again, which is, you know, the purpose of the microsite itself.
Yeah. Now, how long have you been executing on this microsite strategy?
Well, this is actually our first. I mean, we've done microsites in terms of groups of landing pages as well as landing page email combos for a while now. We've done one aimed at the turnarounds in refineries and chemical facilities where they can reduce their rework and, you know, shave their budget and schedule, and other industries as well. This is actually the first where we've used this sort of drip microsite concept, and it's something that I'm excited about to see the impact, because I think it'll definitely have a significant impact on, you know, the revisits to the site and, you know, time staying on the site and the overall stickiness of the site itself.
Yeah. Are you seeing any preliminary data yet?
We haven't as yet, because so far as we're still finalizing a few of the content and we're putting together our A/B tests for the email. And within the next week or two is when we plan to launch it and see what the impact is. And I know with the originally on our microsites, I mean, we saw pretty typical results. I would say open rates, you know, 40s. 50% click-through rates on the order of, let's say, you know, 5 to 8%, and then, you know, conversions through, you know, 1 to 3%, depending on the market, et cetera. So we're hoping to improve on those metrics.
Yeah, and of course you've got a very targeted product in a very niche market.
Yeah.
So the data behind that must be very clean, and you spend a lot of time and energy organizing your data, cleansing that data.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, I mean, you mentioned being in the technical industry. I mean, one of the challenges for any company in the technical industry is expanding and focusing on business benefits, because if you stay focused on the technology itself, the bits and bytes, you know, the buttons are red versus blue, et cetera, then you're really having a different type of conversation than we want to have. We really want to have the business value conversation. Okay, we can digitize a facility and you can access it on your desktop. That's great, but what is the business impact on things like if you shut down your nuclear facility for your outage and you're actually going into it, and what would the value be of having that 3D information ahead of time for your project planning to where you can plan it to minimize radiation dose? Or suppose there's an emergency situation you know, you need to do emergency planning or preparedness. And if you had this, you know, fully digital version where you could walk through, plan, prepare and practice, then, you know, what would the benefit of that be in terms of sort of savings should some type of emergency occur?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think most technology providers are looking at that business value as the real key, right? The people who are actually going to operate the software need to know about the buttons and the speeds and fees.
Exactly.
But those that are going to actually purchase the product need to know the business benefit, the ROI, and benefits around things like you mentioned, like disaster preparedness or contingency plans, those sorts of things.
That's right. And that's why we do have one of the buttons that we do have is a resources button on the left-hand side as part of the site, to where someone who wants to understand the technical information can go in and delve to the level of detail about what the digital facility looks like, how it integrates with their tools, case studies, work processes, you know, videos on construction visualization, you know, using the digital facility, that sort of thing. But that's really something where it's a pool of the information based on their specific needs rather than putting that up front.
Yeah. So as you got started with this, and you have all these, you know, a number of pages, a number of functions and a number of things that people can do when they get to this destination.
Yeah.
You know, when you first started with marketing automation, you were probably measuring specific metrics, maybe it's, you know, visits and that sorts of thing. How has integrating Marketo with your CRM changed how you're reporting and what you're reporting on and how you're being measured as a marketer?
Well, that's a good question. I think really a lot of the metrics are really the same in terms of, you know, click-throughs, conversions, web visits, et cetera. But now we don't see them as individual silos or disparate silos of information. We have sort of a more integrated single view of the lead, which gives us, I think, this 360-degree view of the information to see what is driving some of their behaviors. Are they, you know, researching what is, you know, trying to understand, say, what is laser scanning, say, very early on, or what is, you know, the base technology? Are they in the sort of doing, looking at the benefits? Why would I use laser scanner? Why would I use this technology? Or they're in the comparison stage, you know, later, why would I use QuantaPoint for laser scanning or for digital facilities? And I think by looking at those and providing that complete view, we can get a better understanding of where the lead is within, I think, the lead life cycle, the demand generation life cycle, if you will, and determine the best appropriate action to take, either in terms of automated nurturing, reaching out to them, or what have you. So I don't think it's changed the metrics so much as given us a better view of how the metrics relate to one another and relate to sort of the lead and where they're at.
Yeah, that's a great point. And have you given your sales team any of the tools to be able to manage that life cycle as they, you know, as they come into contact with these people and get a better feel through dialogue where they are, you know, maybe they're evaluating, they're just learning, or they're doing some research, or they're, you know, a little further down. Have you given them any tools that they can then push that person into an appropriate nurture?
Yeah, you know, that's a very good question. And yes, the Sales Insight plug-in to Marketo enables them not only to access the information for the lead in terms of seeing, you know, their interesting moments or web visits or score, but they can actually add them to different campaigns. So they can put them in sort of the research stage campaign, which is the research nurture, the why use this, the what is this technology. Or they can put them in the benefit stage, the why use this technology, or comparison, why use this company. As well as sending them, you know, the variety of email or that we have within Marketo, so the newsletters, the general email we put together for the introduction to the microsite, et cetera.
Yeah, so it's not only a marketing tool, it becomes a sales tool and helps with that marketing and sales alignment.
That's right. And really, at the end of the day, I mean, the marketing automation and the Salesforce automation are two sides of the same coin. They're all part of the overall revenue engine, you know, and with marketing providing, you know, the access to the general demand, you know, the classical marketing, one to big and many, then to, you know, the identified either people who have shown interest anonymously or have identified themselves, you know, small and many, and then into the funnel itself. So it's all part of the same sort of virtuous cycle revenue engine, which are, I think, two sides of that coin.
Do you find that the dialogue between marketing and sales has changed since you rolled out marketing automation, that you're both sort of speaking a common language?
Well, I certainly think in working on these, the landing pages, the microsites, and the campaigns, it's certainly much closer. I mean, we're towards the same end goal in terms of us generating demand, interest, and then feeding that into sales. So we have very robust dialogues, if you will, about what the content is, how to message that content, how to promote it. And, you know, there's certainly differing opinions, and one of the beneficial things about, you know, using Marketo is that we can actually do these A-B tests, at least on the email, to determine, you know, it's not that I think it should be features-based and they should be goals-based or vice versa. We could try both of those out and see which has worked. We've actually done that in a number of our campaigns before. I mean, for example, the intro to an email. And we actually have tried different tactics, one of which go right into the email itself in terms of what, you know, you're trying to say, the benefits you're trying to promote. Another that starts with, you know, I don't know if this email is of interest to you, but if you take a few seconds to read it, you can determine if it is, and then we can have a business conversation. And, you know, that simple intro sentence actually had a measurable impact on the click-throughs of the email itself.
Yeah, it's amazing when you can go back to sales, even though, you know, you may have discussed a program ahead of time, and you've each said, you know, what you think should be the communication, what the tone should be, what should be said. You go back, you look at the metrics, and you say, well, this was the one that actually worked the best, so let's keep running with this one.
Well, that's right. And again, you should always, you shouldn't necessarily take that as the gospel either. You should always re-experiment and retest these things, because it could also vary by market. I mean, when we work in offshore, process, power, architectural, any one of those may really have different ways of looking at things. And the power is the ability to be able to test these and retest these to make it very easily to make that determination.
Yeah, I mean, the insight and the analytics, you know, You can't talk enough about that, being able to determine what's really working, and at the end of the day, what's resulting in leads and what leads are converting into revenue.
That's exactly right. And the more that you can do to, you know, systematize the marketing itself and determine and evaluate the messaging, the execution, et cetera, I think that really provides the greatest value, because the microsite, you know, the drip marketing, et cetera, they're all means to an end, which is, you know, generating demand and going through the cycle to opportunity conversion and revenue.
It always interests me when somebody mentions drip marketing and or nurturing. In your, because people have very different definitions, or the definitions sometimes overlap, could you elaborate a little bit on your interpretation of what drip marketing is to your company and what the difference nurturing is?
I think in the general vernacular, they're interchangeable. But to me, drip marketing is when I have a set of X messages that are going to go out on a regular schedule. And they're going to go out regardless of the actions that are taken by the person receiving them. So they're actually, you know, drip, 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 drip. Nurturing, in my opinion, is where you start out the same. You send them the initial email, but then based on their behavior, either clicking in the email, visiting the website, et cetera, they may receive different follow-on emails based on where they are in that nurturing cycle. So, for example, as I mentioned earlier, we break it into sort of three, sort of the research stage, the what is this technology, the benefit stage, the why use this technology, and then the comparison stage, the why select this company for this technology. So nurturing has more intelligence behind it, that based on their behavior, it changes what the next series of emails may be, or actions may be, or what have you, to lead to someone who's sales ready.
That's an excellent distinction.
My opinion, just my two cents. Your mileage may vary.
Well, I think, you know, as all these terms come out, you know, the industry's changing so fast, the technology's changed so fast, I think people hear these terms and don't really necessarily think about how, you know, which things are overlap, which are just different terminology, and which are actually indicative of a different function. You know, nurturing can be fast.
Yes, right.
I've got a red hot prospect nurturing program, and it executes over a few days. You know,
And people, you know, self-select. I mean, that's one of the differences again between drip and nurturing. Is drip, you're going to get the same series of emails, really almost regardless of what you do in terms of visiting the website, you know, asking, going and doing, say, a contact me and requesting someone contact you. Nurturing is different. Based on your actions, you can self-select to be contacted very quickly. And even if you do select contact me, if you're not really sales ready, we can use that nurturing stage in the campaign to determine, does this really go to sales or does this go to someone else to evaluate? Because it's about protecting time, too. Because, you know, money is a bit of a commodity. You can make it, you can lose it. But once you spend time, that time is gone forever. So where's the best, you know, the best use of our sales and marketing time? This really helps us determine that.
Absolutely. So when you first got started with all of this, you know, marketing automation, all these things, how did you, you know, Marketo's, you know, a key element to the whole strategy. What has it done for you as an executive in charge of running this?
Well, I mean, I think it's really helped deepen my understanding of what's important to both my company and our customers, which I think anytime you can take a step back and sort of see the forest for the trees, because we're also tactical. We have many things to do, a number of things on our plate. Then anything can help us sit back and think strategically and then take tactical actions to implement that strategy in support of the company is provide inherent value in and of itself. You know, and on the tactics side, it helped us more systematically determine and evaluate the messaging and execution that provides us the greatest value. Like we were talking about earlier with drip versus nurturing and different intros to emails and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it really has changed the role and the way we can communicate the objectives and the things that we're trying to accomplish in marketing and how we communicate that out. But it also creates some challenges because it introduces a whole set of language that others don't speak necessarily.
That's true. I mean, and I'm a big fan of metrics, but I mean, I'm a chemical engineer by training. You know, did get my MBA, but depending on who you talk to, I've either gone to the dark side or the light side. I'm not sure who to believe. But the big thing is there. It's still a combination. You can't necessarily let the metrics wholly drive you as well. There's always has to be, you know, a strategic element associated with that, and the tactics to support that, and vice versa. So, and that's why you also can't let these things become lore that we made this first sentence and that increased our click through rate by 1%. Therefore, this first sentence should always be used. So, I think this regular reevaluation and trying to new things and ideas like the, you know, the drip microsite is just a good thing to have. And any tool that helps foster that, you know, marketing automation, Salesforce automation, et cetera, I think are good tools to have.
Absolutely. Well, what can you tell me about your team? How is that team made up? How big is it? How many people is it? You know, how are their functions split? How has this technology impacted it?
Sure. I mean, we have different folks who focus on different areas. I mean, and of course, I look after software development and some other teams as well. But you know, different people access it. For example, customer support, which sort of falls under the business operations aspect, or customer success, we call it. I mean, they access this tool for doing case analysis, et cetera, when incoming cases occur. But we also do proactive customer visits. And we can see sort of the impact on that in terms of doing the calls and that sort of thing. Of course, for marketing communications, it's a core part of our MarComs in terms of putting the message together and getting that out and seeing the follow-on impact of that. Social media is something that we've sort of dipped our toe in a bit, but other than, you know, using the toolbars on the website, we haven't really made full use of as yet. But something I plan to in the very near future have a much more active role on, and you know, again, integration with sales and sort of sales operations and sales support, I think is always beneficial. So really, they're all sort of components of the marketing automation and the tool itself.
So you're using Are you also using the tool in conjunction with those customer communications? Are you, if you have a customer success team, are you executing programs for them, things to improve retention and that sort of thing? I'm sorry, we may have lost James. Are you there, James? Why don't we wait and see if we can get James back on the line? Well, I think we can all agree what James is working on with these microsites is really wonderful. To be able to take a visitor, send them to a microsite that has, you know, a wide array, a huge selection of choices in a very complex product, to be able to guide them through that process is just astounding. And then he's able to take that information, present it to sales, and sales is able to take that information and make intelligent decisions on it.
Hello, can you hear me?
Hi, James. You back? Are you there? May have lost you again. I'm having a little bit of technical difficulties with James' phone.
Hello?
Hello.
This is James.
Hi, James. It's Ed. Are you still there?
I'm here now.
All right. We lost you for a moment.
Yeah, sorry. Technology is great when it works, and this is a plain old telephone system, so I have no idea what happened.
Well, that's okay. We like to keep things fairly informal here.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I was asking whether you had used Marketo in some of those other areas as far as your customer communications, for example. Have you done microsites with customer communications?
You know, that's an interesting point. We have done them as the individual landing pages, for example, newsletters, press releases, that sort of thing. But we really haven't expanded beyond that. But, you know, that could be another very good application. I mean, for example, if we're doing, say, a new product release, we can actually do a similar concept here where, depending on the different industries and applications, you could roll that out and then actually have, you know, the different applications along, you know, similarly to the left-hand side. So far in the customer communications, it's more been using the individual landing page associated with that rather than more of a microsite.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always curious. I always ask that question whenever I meet marketers because one of the principal challenges we struggle with is we've sold, you know, a part of our company, a particular product or service.
Mm-hmm.
How do you then cross-sell, upsell, expand that footprint? And, you know, is it, you know, who are the real prospects and who are the real customers within those accounts?
No, that's
different groups.
Yeah, that's a very good point. One of the things we do or have done in the past is, you know, as part of our customer support, we call it customer success team, is doing proactive visits, be they teleconferences or site visits to clients using it to, I mean, ostensibly say, how are you using the software, how's it going, is there anything I can help you with, but to do that type of cross-selling or upselling. Are there any other opportunities of which you're aware, who else could potentially benefit from this, et cetera. So really under the cloak, if you will, of customer support and success, which is true, you're also doing that cross-selling and upselling without, you know, being salesy, if you will.
Right. I mean, you want to be able to just have that good conversation because if you really truly are helping that client accomplish
right.
what their business goals are,
right.
they're going to say, yes, somebody else in my company can help you.
Absolutely.
No matter
you
how.
Know, that's why we do those, you know, have done those proactive visits or teleconferences because and sometimes it is, you know, sort of enlightened self-interest because it's actually interesting that customers will actually labor under something that's not working right or that they don't understand how it works for a long time. And they'll complain internally but not contact you. So, you know, that can become a marketing and company problem very, very quickly, especially in the blogosphere.
Oh. Yeah. So, you know, I don't think you're alone as far as social and most people having dipped their toe into it, you know, and one of the things with the microsite, you talked about how it could have been a pass-along visit or somebody shared a URL or an email and that person came to the site. What sorts of tools and what sorts of ways are you converting those unknown visitors to somebody that you know?
Yeah, that's a good question. From the anonymous to the known, I mean, really, that there's a bit of a design philosophy there. Our current website, and I'm actually doing a complete rebuild of our website right now to incorporate this. But our current website, for example, requires registration to access most of the information, case studies, white papers, et cetera. I mean, other than press releases and public information, really everything else is registration. I think a philosophy I'm going to undertake is that most of the information is going to be freely accessible and thus searchable by Google and other search engines, so our case studies, white papers, et cetera, except for maybe the two most recent or, you know, the premium or what have you. And those will require registration because one of the things I found is that the more information you give, the more people can, search through it, find it, and build their interest on their own on the website, but also the search engines can find you if somebody happens to be searching on, you know, the companies or techniques or whatever which are in those case studies. So it helps people self-select, helps build interest, it helps increase your search engine rankings. But then if they want to go that next step, they want to see, you know, this more in-depth video, they want to see the most recent case study or white paper, then they register to get that content. Rather than putting a barrier up earlier in the lead nurturing cycle, I want to move it to later in that stage.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that's one of the things that social has had an impact on.
Agreed.
With you know, just website design in general. Myself, I've got a lot of experience in web design, and it used to be that if you had a valuable piece of content, you would just put a gate on it.
That's right.
And social has changed. The expectation now is the content's freely available. When I want to reach out and actually speak to somebody or gain additional information, then I'll tell you who I am.
That's right. No, and I agree. And, you know, and I like to do refreshes on websites every couple of years. I mean, again, because it makes you sit back, think about the clients, think about what you're saying, how you're doing it, et cetera. And that's what I'm undergoing now. We're building a much larger social media component first in terms of following, but also sharing into the base design of the website itself. But, you know, in terms of finding out who they are, I think social media plays can play a key role in that. But really, I think for some of the content, you definitely do want to have something which does let you know who they are. And I think helping them build up that interest to where they want to reveal who they are, like you say, when they're ready, and have those premium content requiring registration, I think is probably the right method there.
Have you used any of the progressive forms capability in Marketo?
Actually, yes. All of our forms use progressive forms. And here's actually where we did a bit of custom development with Marketo. One of the things I found, two things actually. One with the progressive forms that if they'd filled all the forms in, to where it only got down to, say, two fields, your name and your title, you know, you'd still have to click OK and re-enter those. So I actually developed some custom code with Marketo that if you filled every field out in the form, it just passes you, you know, redirects you on to the final page. So, you know, instead of having to have them go through and click again, if somebody's already told me who they are, remove the barrier of having to tell me who they are yet again. So we did some custom development there, which actually I think worked out really well. So if they've registered for content before and they've shared all of their information with us that are required in those fields, it just passes them right on. And semi-related to that, on the premium content side, as we were just discussing, we also did some custom development to add content downloads tracking into Marketo as well. By default, it just shows sort of the web pages they were on, the links they clicked. But if they actually downloaded content, like viewed a streaming video or a flash or a PDF, it wouldn't say that. So we added that to our interesting moments as well and our lead scoring.
That's fantastic. You know, for those of the people that are listening that don't know about progressive forms and progressive profiling, the general principle here is if somebody has completed a form on your website and they've told you their name, their email address, how large their company is, and their title, the next time they see that form, you'd be asking them a different set of questions or perhaps just fewer questions. Where,
that's right.
If you know their company size, perhaps the next thing you ask is, how large is their sales force, or about a business problem that they have. Something like that, that you're collecting additional information, but you're not putting up a large barrier to your content.
Jackson, you know, I had really no familiarity with those before Marketo, but, you know, that's one of those aha moments. It just makes so much sense because you see these forms that are a page long on a website, and every time I'm seeing them, I'm like, ah.
if
I'm interested,
off,
do I
right.
have to fill these in? That's right. And someone asked me my fax number. My fax number? Really? What are you going to fax me? It's like a generic form. Like, wow, is this the 1980s calling in? I don't need to. So I think progressive forms really helped in that regard.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if anybody that you know, listening that's familiar with being the webmaster and doing these sorts of things, the stuff that comes across in forms that are too long is garbage. People just take the quickest path. They'll pick the first option in the menu. They'll just type in, you know, blah at blah.com just to get through your form. Whereas if it's very small, it's less invasive, less frightening, and therefore, you know, people are a little more likely to give you accurate information.
That's right. And really, I mean, one of the things, again, it made me think about, well, what information are we gathering? What are we doing with that? Is it relevant? I mean, do I need to know your physical address up front? No. I mean, I really don't in this day need to know your physical address at all. You know, just a lot of those things. Why we get fax number? I really don't care. It really makes you think about a lot of the that you really do need. And, of course, one of the things that we did do, once you fill out that progressive profile page, it sends you to a thank you page, and it actually emails you using the workflow in Marketo the link to the page itself. Because, you know, if somebody types blah, blah.com, shame on me if I don't catch that and I still give them the content.
Right. Well, you know, it's also indicative of, did you put up a gate too quickly in the process for somebody?
Exactly. You're right.
You
I mean,
all
luckily we haven't seen too many of those. I mean, since we've implemented the progressive profiling, I don't know metrics off the top of my head, but I would say our false leads through people entering incorrect information has gone down significantly, at least 90% less.
That's interesting, yeah. So, you know, you've been doing this for a couple of years now, and you've probably forgotten more than most people, you know, have learned in this area. What would you offer to somebody who's just getting started, either with marketing automation or just trying to get their microsites and feed this information to their sales team? What do you have for lessons learned that help our audience with?
And, you know, I'd say the most key thing is a good understanding of your business and marketing tools and how you think a demand generation or marketing automation or whatever tool can support that. Yeah, that's really number one, because these tools can do a lot of things. They can add a lot of value in a lot of different ways. But, you know, if they don't support your business or marketing goals, really they don't add value. So that's the key thing. What business goal am I trying to achieve, or what business challenge am I trying to solve, and how does this help me do that? You know, the second one is, I wouldn't underestimate the amount of effort that's required to really properly implement marketing automation. I mean, you know, you really have to think about what's your philosophy for lead scoring based on, you know, the demographics, their title, their level, based on their actions. What information do you want to put in campaigns? Is it a multi-step? Is it a single step? If they click in the first email, is a second email different? I mean, there's a lot to think about, and I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all template that will meet the needs of the people trying to implement. So I think those two, you know, the business marketing goals understanding and thinking about the implementation and not understanding those efforts are really key. And, you know, if you do those properly, I think you'll get significant rewards.
Yeah, I think, you know, marketing automation can be put out there as, you know, a panacea, right? Oh, well, you know, we're having trouble with our marketing. We must need a marketing automation system. But your point is 100% spot on, where if you didn't look at the business processes, if you didn't look at the real problem you're trying to solve and the nature of that problem, marketing automation isn't going to solve it for you on its own.
You know, that's where marketing teams can be susceptible to marketing. I mean, at the end of the day, it's still very similar to marketing to other companies. I mean, it's the five whys. The reason they tell you they want is never the reason. You have to ask the five whys or so to really get down to the base business goal or base business challenge that you're trying to solve, and that's where you focus your time. And it's the same with marketing automation.
Yeah, I would agree with that. As far as just getting started with it and looking at the processes, what sort of impact did it have on the talent in your organization? I mean, clearly, you had to learn a whole new set of skills. What about others?
Yeah.
You know, how did it impact the overall?
I think that's an interesting point. It depends really on the tool, and I can't say with the other automation tools, but with Marketo, it was actually fairly simple to pick up and put together emails in the landing pages. I mean, it was a lot of just drag and drop. You didn't have to code HTML. You know, it was a Word-like interface for the emails and the landing pages. It was relatively simple. So you didn't really have to learn new skills. Now, for some of the custom things we did, like, you know, the auto-forward if you completed your progressive fields and the tracking the PDF content. I have to learn some JavaScript and some other things for that. But on the whole, it wasn't that bad. Now, we did have to think about things in a process-oriented point of view. Like, for example, put together a workflow for campaigns. We had to think about the step-by-step, but that was still a drag-and-drop activity as well. So really, the learning curve wasn't that big in terms of the tool itself. The greatest learning curve was, what do we really want to do with it? Because it's a toolkit, and you can apply that in a variety of different ways.
And the learning doesn't stop, does it?
No, it doesn't. Like this microsite, the one thing I'll say, the Marketo tool is very good at putting together the landing pages. The microsites themselves, it wasn't really designed with that in mind. So, you know, one of the key learnings I had there was, you know, make sure you have the template, like for the buttons, the applications, et cetera, done before you start creating the other pages. Because, for example, we created a series of 8 pages, and the sales team said, yeah, I want to change the order of these buttons and change the text. So I have to go back to 8 individual pages and change all of those
on a
template-based system. So that was a key learning. I mean, so this is new enough that the technology doesn't really support it. Or things like you're talking about, if someone visited mid-campaign to show them the appropriate number of buttons or that sort of thing. But, you know, that will come, especially if this proves a successful concept. But making sure you have what you want up front and your goal, I think, is still key regardless.
Yeah, you can't underestimate planning and planning around what the products are currently capable of. That's where the expertise comes in, where you want to do something. You say, well, this particular tool does it in this particular manner, and this is how we have to do it.
That's right.
But it's all evolving so fast, and you know, you got involved with Marketo 2 years ago. You must have been one of their very early clients.
We did a pretty in-depth evaluation, and we reviewed all of the majors as well as a couple of the minor and other players, and we made a decision, and we've been very, very happy.
That's terrific. Well, James, I want to thank you very much for participating in our show today.
Absolutely.
And for our audience, our next show will be on March 31st, and it will feature Chrissy Pector of Brainshark and Adam Vatterin of Iron Mountain. They're two rockstar CRM Salesforce administrators who are tasked with managing complex CRM environments, but also environments where marketing automation has an impact on their CRM system. I hope you can join us. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.